Well, as I said in the prayer, we are living in a time of great stress, great anxiety about the future, great uncertainty about whereof everything is going to be heading. The economy is being assaulted. I don't know if you've been seeing the prices of everything going up here recently. Our commodities are limited. Food supplies are now being in question for the future. Personal securities are being threatened. There are some who believe we're on the brink of World War III, etc. Here we are finally recovering from 2 years of shutdowns and mandates and all kinds of propaganda, and it just seems to keep going in one form or another. The insanity just continues there. So all of that creates fear in the hearts of all Americans, and it creates fear also in the hearts of Christians. That's the way of life that we have come to know is quickly going away, and I don't know that we're ever going to get it back. And so that's a disturbing, very unsettling feeling to have to go through all that. And all that begs the question, of course, how should Christians respond to that? Well, the simple answer is just trust God and everything will be okay. In my opinion, that can be a very overly simplistic response. And it does warrant some explanation. In other words, you can't just say that without, you know, filling in the blanks or offering some kind of explanation as to what that means. On the one hand, of course we're supposed to trust God. We are no different than the world if we don't trust in God. We are to live by faith, and faith is nothing without trust in God. On the other hand, trusting God must not translate to you're a moral coward if you experience any bit of fear in your life whatsoever. That also misrepresents the word and misrepresents what we're told to do. There are a number of times when Jesus says, do not fear or do not be afraid. And on the surface, it might sound like he's saying we are not allowed to fear, as in it is a sin to experience any modicum or any little speck of fear in our lives whatsoever. This is not what Jesus meant. He knew and he still knows what makes us afraid. He is not asking us to pretend that what makes us afraid no longer makes us afraid at all, or to pretend to be brave when we're facing those fears. Instead, Jesus is asking us to make a choice. And the choice is not between being absolutely fearless or melting in fear when you're confronted with something that scares you. In other words, it's not a choice between A or B, and you're either one extreme or the other. Rather, it is choosing to put our trust and confidence in Him more than we put in our fear. And that's really what it all comes down to. And this can't remain just a concept talk, you know, where we're just throwing out concepts and ideas and ideals in a Bible class or in a sermon. And then real life, of course, is a different matter. No, this is something that needs to be put into everyday action. And it really defines what the Christian belief is. So I want to talk about that here. Fear, of course, is part of what makes us human and part of what makes us wise. If we are afraid for the right reasons, it can prolong our life and health. I have wrestled with fear all my life. I continue to wrestle with that. I'm just being open here when I say that. And I know this might sound shocking to some of you, and I don't mean this that way, but I've never done drugs. I've never gotten drunk. I did get a little tipsy on a couple of cream sodas one time, but I don't think that was the same thing. I've never engaged in extreme sports. I've never drank decaf coffee. And I stay away from those things in a large part, and I'm just saying it bluntly here, in large part, the reason why I stayed away from all those things is because I was afraid of what might happen to me if I engaged in them. And this is not an irrational or unwise fear. This is a very practical or reasonable fear. And I know some of you might be thinking in your minds, you haven't lived, right? Because you haven't done some of those things. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to live. That's why I didn't do those things. Okay, so it's just all a matter of perspective there. On the other hand, and this is where I'm not very proud about saying this at all, my fear has also kept me from doing what other Christians have done. In other words, it has kept me from stepping out into the unknown. It has kept me from missionary work to foreign countries. I've been asked several times to go to India, go to the Philippines, go to Africa, those three places in particular. And I've turned it down, partly because I was just afraid. I was afraid of what that meant and what that would translate to. Striking up conversations with strangers. I'm not good at that. Sometimes I'm afraid of that. I'm not proud of this. I'm just telling you that there are things that sometimes we struggle with, that the fear doesn't just melt away just because we get baptized into Christ. So on the one hand, fear protected me because it spared me from some very real dangers that I did not need to face. Unnecessary risks, you might say. On the other hand, fear inhibits me because, yes, it does spare me from certain dangers, but it's based upon personal protection rather than acting in faith. So there's that struggle there. And as a disciple of Christ, I need to exercise some common sense here. At the same time, I need to rely on the Lord when it comes to doing His work. And so then there's this balance of ideas here. First of all, not all fear is bad or should be avoided. Secondly, not all fear is justifiable or defensible. So it just comes down to understanding which is which and when should I do the one or the other. And that's kind of what this lesson is all about here. It's not a sin to be afraid left to itself. Okay? It's not a sin to feel fear. It's a natural human emotion and a natural human reaction to things. It is a sin, however, to live by fear rather than by faith in God, His providence, and His mercy. So what we're not saying is, if I go out and take street drugs, you know, and get high and lose my mind on that, God will protect me, right? Well, that's a foolish way to live. You should fear what those drugs can do to you. That's healthy and wise. On the other hand, what we should say is, if I serve His cause, then He will protect me however He sees fit to do so. That also is healthy and wise. And I can't tell you where that's going to take you. God Himself doesn't necessarily tell you where that's going to take you, but you're to trust Him. Remember, fear, or faith rather, is nothing if it doesn't have trust. But here's the kicker to all that too, and that is, it's not your call to determine what I should not be afraid of. And it's not my call to tell you what you should not be afraid of. It's God's call to tell all of us what we should be afraid of or not be afraid of. There are some things that we should be afraid of. Let God determine what those things are through whatever means He chooses. But there are things that we should not be afraid of, or at least not allow fear to dominate the scenario. Let God determine what those things are. For example, you cannot say to me, well, since I'm not afraid to engage in a cold conversation with someone about God, you shouldn't be either. Well, the fact is, we're all wired a little bit differently. We're not wired the same. We're not all gifted the same. Some people are natural evangelists, and others are not. I recognize this in myself as a preacher, as a Christian, you know, as a worker in the kingdom. You know, I have certain fortes, certain strengths, certain things that I do very well, and there's other things I don't do so well. So I want to capitalize on those strengths, but at the same time, I need to work on those other things as well. We need to be careful not to be unnecessarily critical or judgmental toward brothers or sisters who are simply doing their best where they're at in their lives. Kind of what we talked about a little bit in our lesson, our class this morning. Always a mystery to me how the classes and the lessons dovetail together. I don't know how that happens. It's weird. It's almost like the same person is writing the class material and the sermons. So all of this discussion here does beg the question, well, if it's up to God to decide, then what does God say? Specifically, what does Jesus say that we should not be afraid of? Now, as I go through this, I don't know what happened there. That is really bizarre. So as I say this here, these points are categorized by subject. That's supposed to say, What does God say? And I don't know why that went that way. Okay, Matthew chapter 29, excuse me, Matthew chapter 10, verse 29, Jesus says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a cent? And yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? So, verse 31, do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows." Sparrows are little birds. That's an actual picture of a sparrow there in the PowerPoint there. They're creatures of little importance compared to you, compared to people and their souls. Chapter 10, verse 11, God knows when a sparrow does fall to the ground. In other words, he knows when something bad happens to a little bird. Well, if that's true, if he knows what happens there and he cares about that, then doesn't he care so much more about something that's more important than a sparrow? And you are more important than a sparrow. That's not me saying that. That's Jesus saying that. And he's telling us because of that, you should not be afraid about whether God cares about you or not. And I think that is something that Christians or even people in general do fear or fret over, you know, that God may not remember me or God doesn't care. You're one of 7 billion people on the planet. How can God keep track of us all? It's easy to be forgotten or overlooked or ignored, you might be thinking, and yet you're not dealing with an ordinary person here. You're dealing with a supernatural being who is capable of keeping track of every single person on the planet. And not only that, but caring about every single person on the planet. God promises to care for us. That's what Jesus is saying. Promises to care for us. Now, it's not my job to tell you how he does this. My job is to tell you what Jesus said. It's a waste of time to be fearful and to be worrying and to be anxious as to whether or not he does care about you, because the case is already settled. He does. Stop worrying about that. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25 through 34 that Randy had read for us, it says, "Do not worry about food and clothing and life's necessities." That word worry there in the Greek literally means overly caring. Okay, and thus, by application, anxious, fretful, distracted away from important things and toward unimportant things. And this is something that people really do engage in so much today. We get taken away from the important things, and we get our minds focused on the lesser unimportant things. Okay, and this is something we're being actually trained to do. We're being conditioned to do this in our society. And unfortunately, that spills into the church, and now we find ourselves doing it sometimes too. And what he's really talking about is don't have a divided heart. The whole Sermon on the Mount is really, if you could apply a theme to the entire Sermon on the Mount, it's basically get your heart right with God. So to have a divided heart means that you would, on the one hand, say, I trust God, I have faith in God, I know God's going to take care of me. And on the other hand, you're sitting there worrying about everyday essentials and everyday needs that God promised to take care of if you have faith and trust in him. So how can you straddle both these things all at once? You can't, honestly. Okay? He does say in Matthew chapter 6, now at the end of the chapter, he does say there is a condition to this in verse 34, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and then these things will be added to you. So there is something that you need to do in order for the promise to be good. You need to be seeking first what is important to God. But otherwise, you have a heart that's divided between serving God and then worrying and fretting and being anxious over things he promises to provide. And that's what's called compromise. Your heart becomes compromised. God knows you need food. He knows you need the staples of life. Trust him to provide those things. And it's okay to pray for those things. Remember Matthew 6, 11. Jesus, in his teaching his disciples how to pray, you know, give us this day our daily bread. So it's okay to ask for those things, but it's not okay to ask for them and then doubt them, and then doubt whether God's going to provide them. James in chapter 1, James 1, verse 6 through 8, he says, you know, one who does that is unstable in all his ways, being a double-minded man, and let not that man think that he's going to get what he asked for. Okay, so there's some three warnings against doing that right there. In Luke chapter 5 and verse 8 here, there's the whole account, Luke chapter 5, the first 10 or 11 verses. You know the story most likely that Peter and some of the other disciples they're out there in the lake and they're trying to catch fish and they haven't caught any. Jesus says, go out and throw your nets out a little deeper, a little farther, and then they bring in this big catch. And then Peter falls down before Jesus in verse 8 and says, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. And Jesus' response to that is, do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men. Do not fear. Peter allowed his feelings of guilt and shame and unworthiness to lead him to believe that Jesus has no use for a man who has guilt and shame and feelings of unworthiness. And that's just not true. Or that Jesus doesn't want such a man. And that's just not true. It's not true at all. Jesus doesn't call us because we're all pretty and perfect and flawless and sinless. That's not why he calls us to himself. He calls us because, first of all, he loves us and he wants what's best for us. And secondly, he calls us because he can transform us into what he needs us to be. And if Jesus needs you to be a fisher of men, then he's going to call you and transform you into a fisher of men. Now, if you're one of those like Peter did right at the front there and say, well, just go away from me, Lord. I'm not worthy of this. Well, of course you're not worthy. But I don't want this. But of course, it's in your best interest, right? You're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. On one hand, you're saying, I want to be with God and I want to be with Jesus, but I don't want to become what he's going to make me. Because you're afraid. You're afraid of what that means, or you're afraid of rejection. You're afraid that he might find something in you that he doesn't like and therefore, you know, dismiss you. Fear of rejection is a huge problem among so many people, usually in relationships, but here we have a different kind of relationship. Peter was not yet a fisher of men when Jesus called him, but he would become one. And you might not yet be a fisher of men or whatever Jesus wants you to be. But you can become one if you're not afraid and believe him and trust him. It is true that Jesus will not allow us to continue in whatever makes us guilty, but we should not wring our hands over whether or not he will accept us or forgive us and use us if indeed we come to him with a humble heart. This is what the Master says. Matthew chapter 14, verse 27. We see the disciples are out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, that is. And then in the middle of the night, Jesus starts coming to them. The fourth watch, it says, he came to them, verse 25, walking on the sea. Keep in mind, it's the middle of the night, it's stormy. The disciples are probably already a bit unnerved because of what's happening here. And the disciples see him walking on the sea. They're terrified. Some of them say it's a ghost. They cried out in fear. Now, in all fairness, if that were you, what would you do? I mean, you're out in a boat in the middle of a huge lake or a sea, and the waves are, you know, doing what they're doing, and the storm has already got you a bit unnerved, and then you see this figure coming toward you in the darkness. I don't know about you, but I would be a little concerned about that right up front, okay? Because I don't know if you knew this, but it's not normal for people to walk on water toward a boat in the middle of the sea. And for that very reason, the disciples are very, afraid of what they see. And what does Jesus say to them? He's walking toward them in the dark. He says, do not fear. Verse 27, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. As I understand it, he's not condemning their fear. He's dispelling their fear or replacing their fear. He's not saying, yeah, you're a bunch of scaredy cats to think that, you know, that you should have been afraid at all. You should have known what was happening, but they didn't know. He's dispelling their fear and replacing it with faith instead. And so what he's saying in so many words here is, since I am here with you, since it is me that's here, you should not be afraid. Now that you know it's me, don't be afraid. And all of us will go through storms of life and fire of trials. Inevitably, it is part of what makes us useful to the Master is to get through those successfully. But only if we face those storms and those fires with faith and not get swallowed up in fear. Some of you know more of what I'm talking about than others. Some of you haven't really gone through a whole lot of storms yet. Some of you have been through the fire. You've gone through the storms. You know exactly what I'm talking about. In James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4, you can read that on your own. I invite you to do that. James talks about the testing of your faith. He doesn't talk about the confirmation of your fears. He talks about the testing of your faith. And that testing of your faith brings about endurance. And then that endurance brings about a perfect result. And then that perfect result brings about your perfection and your completion, lacking in nothing. Fear will not do any of those things. Fear will not bring about endurance. It will not bring about a perfect result. It will not bring about completion. It will not bring about a lacking in nothing. It will complicate, first of all, and then just absolutely destroy all of those endeavors. I know, and I speak from experience, that some of the storms and fires that we face in our lives are frightening, and they are enough to make our heart melt. But if Jesus is there, then why are we afraid? We need to recognize his presence. We need to hold on to his hand and let him lead us through those things rather than cowering back in fear or maybe even questioning and saying, Jesus, I'm here going through this thing. Where are you? Well, he's the one walking on the water toward you. And he's the one that's saying, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid while you're going through your storm. In Hebrews 10:38, it says, but my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So what does God want from us? He's not saying that we cannot have fear and that if you have any speck of fear in your life, you're doomed, you're useless, you're to be rejected. That's not what he's saying, but he does say that you should live by faith and not by fear. And that seems clear enough. In Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, Jesus speaking here to the church at Smyrna, do not fear what you are about to suffer, he says. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison so that you will be tested. Remember, the testing of our faith produces endurance and so on, right? And here they're going to be tested. You will have tribulation for 10 days, he says. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. Fear is a human response to suffering. No one wants to suffer. And people go to great lengths to avoid suffering. So much of the medical establishment is about keeping people from suffering at all, even when it's trite or petty or insignificant suffering. There's a pill for everything, you might say. And yet Jesus is not talking about needless or pointless, and certainly not endless suffering. He's talking about suffering that has a goal or an objective in mind, suffering that leads to a certain end, and suffering that is finite in time. It has a hope, it has a goal, and there is resolution to it. Temporary suffering, in other words, for his name, for his sake, and for his work, is what he's talking about here. It's not meant to destroy those Christians, nor is it, when we face the same thing, meant to destroy us or lead to the ruin of our souls, but just the opposite. It is allowing us to stand up and be counted among him as though, as we belong to him. We identify him, very much what Bob said in his comments about stand up for Jesus. It gives us an opportunity to identify with Christ in the midst of a very godless and Christless world. The crown of life that he promises here is not given to those whose fear far outpaces their faith. Those who distrust Jesus, those who avoid doing his work or don't believe in what he promises. You see this similar message elsewhere, James 1:12, for example. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial. He's not talking about just any man. He's talking about a Christian man who perseveres under a trial specifically for his faith. For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Interesting that he talks about loving here when the man is going through trials in faith, because love is really the backbone of all of that. When we love Christ, then we're going to put faith in him, and then we're going to allow ourselves to go through those tests in his name. We're never told to persevere in fear, but only persevere in faith. That's how you get the crown there. And then 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 14. But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed, Peter says, and do not fear their intimidation and do not be troubled. Well, it's easy to be intimidated by unbelievers. I will tell you that by my own experience. By faith, however, we can hold our ground. We can stand up for what is right, and we cannot be deterred or be, misled or just really just stopped in our tracks there. By faith, we can do this. By fear, we can't. But by faith, we can. Acts chapter 18, verse 9, Paul has gone to the city of Corinth, and he's involved there in tent making with a couple of other people, and he seems to be, by implication from what is being said, he seems to be a rather avoiding or not getting engaged as much into the work as he had before. And the Lord said to Paul in the night by vision, he said, do not be afraid any longer, but go on speaking and do not be silent. Obviously, Paul has been inhibited to boldly preach, possibly because of his own personal fears for his own health. Some of this is justified, of course. If you look through 2 Corinthians 11, you see all the things that Paul went through, how he was assaulted by people. By this point, he's been stoned to death or left for dead anyway. And he's gone through all kinds of persecutions, been beaten, was beaten with rods there in Philippi, imprisoned. He's gone through all kinds of things that you and I just can't relate to, because most of us have never gone through any of those things. And no wonder then, he says in verse 10, for I am with you, and no man will attack you in order to harm you, for I have many people in this city. So God, Christ here in this case, is speaking to Paul. He gives his promise to Paul that I'm going to take care of you. This account speaks to me personally. I don't know if it does to you, but I have allowed fear to keep me from speaking more boldly when I should have, and I'm ashamed to say that, but I'm just being realistic. So that you might be able to identify more with, hey, we're all just human here. And sometimes we do have fear and allow fear to dominate the situation. While Jesus is not speaking directly to me as he did to Paul, I would do well to listen. But you would too. At the same time, it's not your place to tell me how or when or who to speak to and then criticize me if I don't. The principle here is general and not specific. It does not have to match your experience or your expectations. And by the way, that goes both ways, that if I were very bold and courageous in speaking to others and you're still struggling with some of that, it's not my place to condemn you for struggling. Okay? That doesn't mean that you don't need to struggle. It means that I'm not to condemn you for struggling. Hope you got that and the way that I meant it. The point is that we all need to confess Christ to others, to our friends and family, as well as strangers and enemies, but we need to do so in faith and not recoil and retreat in fear. We want Jesus to confess us to the Father, and so we need to confess him to others. It just makes sense. Luke chapter 12 and verse 32, do not be afraid. Little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. And this is said by Jesus on the heels of just saying, seek his kingdom. In other words, as I understand this here, he's saying, do not let fear keep you from doing the seeking. If you're to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, then don't let fear stand in the way of that pursuit. And this is a real easy thing to do, to let fear stand in the way. And there are many Christians who have done just this. They let fear dominate their thoughts, stand in the way of their pursuit of the kingdom, and not surprisingly, they don't end up to be strong Christians. They end up being weak Christians or fall away Christians. And the reason for that is because of their choice. Remember, this is all about choices. It's all about choosing to be faithful or choosing to be fearful, and they chose to be fearful when God said, "Do not be afraid." If we are citizens of the kingdom of God, then we need to exercise faith in pursuing and doing the work of the kingdom. The same faith that led us to Christ in the first place must continue as we draw nearer to God in that faith. It's not like you get to the baptism part and then you can stop and, you know, eat, drink, and be merry and take your ease, right? I mean, the work's just begun. It didn't stop. It just actually began. And now it's time to live that faith out that you just promised to God. God does not entrust his kingdom to a bunch of scared servants who are afraid to serve. Why would he do that? It doesn't make any sense up front. And secondly, he says just the opposite. So we're told, for example, in 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, actually, I think that's supposed to be 1 Timothy 1, 7, that we're not to be timid about our faith. We're not given a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, discipline, and love. That discipline there really means sound judgment. So power, love, and then sound judgment in exercising our faith. Revelation 21, verse 8 does say, "The cowardly and the unbelieving and a whole list of other people and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone." Well, that's an awful place to be. What's interesting to me in this passage is that the cowards are mentioned in that group. I expect the liars and the immoral people and the murderers and thieves, I expect that. But cowards too. Cowards. People who live by fear rather than faith. They will be in that awful scenario there. The cowardly are really the unbelieving, because they're not walking by faith. Because if they were, they wouldn't be cowardly. They wouldn't be fearful. So it doesn't mean here be fearless, because faith is not a complete absence of all human fear. But at the same time, faith does require us to set aside our fears in light of God's protection and providence and promises. Do not fear. Do not be afraid. These are Jesus' comforting and reassuring words to his people. He doesn't say, "You are worthless to me if you feel any fear at all." He doesn't say that. But at the same time, he also doesn't say, "It's okay to allow fear to override your faith." He didn't say that either. In every instance in which our fear accompanies what we are given to do as the Master's disciples, we need to make a decision. Am I going to allow fear to keep me from doing that, or am I going to walk forward in faith in order to do that? And as you see on the screen, whatever you feed, whether it's your fear or your faith, is what is going to prevail. And you might recall an earlier lesson from this year, back in January, what you allow will continue. So if you continue, or allow fear rather to continue, well, it's going to continue until you make a different decision. The same thing is with faith. If you pursue faith, that will also prevail unless you make a different decision. Why would you do that? Even if we do walk forward in faith, it doesn't mean we have to be absolutely fearless, but rather we're supplying our faith rather than feeding our fear. And that's really what it comes down to. Believe me, I've thought a lot about this, because these are some of my struggles right here. In fact, this whole lesson came out of me reading through one of the Gospels and just seeing all the times that do not fear thing kept jumping out at me. And then I kept thinking about myself, and then I kept thinking that maybe some other people are going through the same struggle I am. Maybe someone here is going through that same struggle that I've struggled with. It's not a sin to be afraid. It is a sin to choose fear over faith, especially when the Master keeps saying, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid." He cannot be obedient and submissive to the master and not listen to him all at the same time. These are two incompatible beliefs, and they produce two different people. So if I'm going to listen to the master in some areas, I need to listen to him in this area as well when he says, do not be afraid. The world is an increasingly frightening place to live, and yet here we are. We can't get out of it. Not yet, anyway. And while unbelievers live in fear, not knowing how everything turns out, Christians of all people, can walk forward in faith because we do know how it all turns out. We know how it all ends. We've been promised. We know what's in store for us and what the future holds because our Master has promised those things to us. So what about you? Are you living in fear or are you walking by faith? Are you listening to your fears or are you listening to the Master? I'll leave those questions with you to answer. That is our lesson. That is your invitation. If you need to respond this morning by coming forward, this would be your opportunity to do so as we stand and sing the song that Bob's about to lead us in.